Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined by Mr. Lawrence Jackson and Kyle Dvorchik. It is somehow already week six. We're going to be talking our weekly rankings conundrums, the Jaguars backfield, maybe mentioned Tony Pollard, who we haven't known how to rank for 3 years, maybe mentioned Aaron Jones, who we haven't known how to rank for 2 years, maybe mentioned. We're going to get to a lot of the hot button players from this week, but we'll start, as usual, with Monday Night Football, a little recap from a crazy game, one where the Raiders went up 17-0, and then for the second time this year, blew a 17-0 lead. Devonta Adams did something maybe he shouldn't have. He did a bunch of stuff he should have during the game, scoring two monster touchdowns, then he shoved a guy who was real sad about it, and like saying he's going to call the cops or something. And then we got the Josh McDaniels and Andy Reid, I think maybe kind of overthinking things, trying to please us computer boys, Kyle. 2-point conversions. I don't even know where to start with this game. It was a wild, wild, wild game.
Well, Andy Reid wasn't trying to please anyone. I can tell you that. He was quite disappointing. I do agree, though, the McDaniels thing, definitely. But, like, you could see how it would have worked out. They get a shot to get the win at first, and then they had a very real shot. Like, if we were, like, 2 or 3 inches of toe touching the ground different on Devonta Adams at the end,
they get
two shots at winning that game. And like Daniel Carson's a good kicker. They probably do end up winning it if we get the Devonta catch. So like that one made sense to me. I don't know for sure it was the right decision. I kind of think it was. Andy Reid's still kind of a goober when it comes to anything other than designing really cool offenses. Like the individual plays, the sequencing of the plays, slam dunk, great stuff. Hire someone else to do other things. Jesus, Andy.
Yeah, he's not good at the overarching strategy. Lawrence, I mean, what do you even say after that game?
Just like I said, odd game. I actually saw some type of a stat earlier that showed how a team who had a lead as big as the Raiders, 17-0, had a quarterback with no turnovers, had a 150-yard rusher, had a 100-yard receiver, and still lost the game with all of that. So
is that the first time in NFL history that's happened, maybe?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You had a 100-yard receiver, 150-yard rusher, quarterback with no turnovers, and you had a 17-point lead. Never happened until last night. And now here we are with Patrick Mahomes doing it again. The seem like the master now coming back from 10-plus point leagues. And this one was one that the Raiders really had to have. Like you don't want to go down 1-4 in this division when you know what the Chiefs are going to do. The Chargers have won a couple of games in a row. So now you sitting there looking at the Denver Broncos right in the face and saying, who's going to be the sorriest team in this division?
Somehow the Raiders feel way less sorry than the Broncos. Like the Broncos had,
especially after last night too. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. I mean, think about like Thursday Night Football versus Monday Night Football. Like Raiders went out, gave it their all, played a really good game. They hung in there with Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes did Mahomes stuff. I think all four of their games have been one possession losses so far, yikes, if I remember correctly. Whereas the expectations for Russell Wilson under, you know, escaping the oppressive thumb of Pete Carroll was that, oh, he's nuking. He is going off. And his receivers are maybe just as good, certainly have the potential to be just as good. The running back's great. The offensive line, not bad. And a great defense. And it's just all coming apart. It all already came apart at the seams. So to me, at least, like, the Raiders feel like they could have been a 3-2 team at this point. The Broncos feel like they should be the one that's 1-4. They should be 0-5. Man, they're terrible.
Yeah, Lawrence, you kind of alluded to it. The Raiders and Broncos are basically about to get locked in a closet, like each handed a knife, and like someone turns off the lights, and like it's like a battle royale for them.
Duke it out. And we can't leave out the fact that, you know, we all know Travis Kelce had the 4 touchdowns, but to do it on 25 total receiving yards.
I think that's the fewest yards for a 4 touchdown player ever. And I think it's by a measure of something like 70 yards.
That's like a G move for sure. You show up and just score your touchdowns, go back to the sideline, no questions asked. Yeah, Kyle, to your point, Raiders 1-4, the Broncos 2-3. The Raiders' losses have been by 5, 6, 2, and 1 points. Like, the Raiders have actually played good football games, not whereas bad, the Broncos have yet to play a single good football game. And, man, the two-point conversion thing with the Raiders, I actually do think it was the right call against the Chiefs. But I just think in general, still, these teams underestimate like the psychological devastation of not getting it, which I know is a really boomer argument. But you go from, you know, like, we're literally in this game to, okay, we're still losing. And against the Chiefs in Arrowhead Stadium, you have to like do everything possible. I actually did agree with the last night, but I do think they're getting out over their skis a little bit. And it is almost like they're trying to please, like NBC Sports Edge, like Patrick Crane. Yeah. They're trying to please the spreadsheets.
Us in particular.
Yeah, and I don't know, man. They can probably rein in it a little bit. But
I would have said, you know, I would have agreed with it if it was, you know, 2 minutes left rather than 4-plus minutes. Chiefs didn't end up scoring again, you know, so – It's always hindsight 2020. If they make that and they end up winning the game, we talking about Josh McDaniels different. We talking about the Raiders done turned the corner. Now they're 1-4, and that's what we're going to talk about.
I think Kyle's point, too. Or you go, Kyle.
Yeah, I think if they do end up going up 1 point, would it be 31-30? Like, we don't get, like, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire 2nd-and-4 run blown up in the backfield or whatever. Like, they probably just let Patrick Mahomes do the thing where there's a few minutes left in the game, and he just goes, like, he probably leaves too much time. Like, that's actually, like, what we saw with, like, the Josh Allen versus Mahomes thing. Allen was too good, and he gave Mahomes, what, 15 seconds? And, like, that's the thing. I think if the Raiders end up going up 31-30, I don't think they've like won the game already. But anyways, there's like
so much weird game theory, Kyle, because I kind of feel like if they had tied it 30-30, like, this is Andy Reid. He's just going to turtle. And like, he's not going to be aggressive. He's not.
That's the going up 6, kicking the field goal when you're up 3, going up 6, lets your opponent know exactly what they need to do. Yeah. Obviously more points is good, and being up more than a field goal in theory sounds good, but going up 6, especially, like, you know, if you're doing against good offense, you're like, oh, my opponent knows exactly what their win condition is, and it's relatively easy to obtain, get a touchdown. So like, there are really interesting game theory elements about trying to understand. It's like poker, trying to understand.
Yeah, it really is poker-ish.
What you do and how your opponent treats it and how that will make you treat it. And there's the levels to it.
And that is why even in poker, sometimes like even the best players won't do the best possible EV move much, much more often. In poker, there's usually far fewer excuses to not do the most EV move as there is in football, but it's still, Kyle, I agree. I think we would be talking about even more had the Raiders it did work out. They were in position to win, and he just couldn't, one of the best players in the league is quite very narrowly could not get 2 feet in bounds. Before we move on to like our general rankings concerns, Kyle, I'll start with you on this one. I just like where, I don't know who to trust in this Chiefs offense right now. Like in the receiver core, we got MVS's best game on Monday night. We got Juju 8 more targets, but going nowhere. We got Sky Moore continuing to dip a toe in. Like, are there any trends? Is there anyone to be excited about this receiver core? Or is like, do we have to keep waiting for this to play out?
I mean, once again, we saw Juju and MVS run all of the routes as we expect, or nearly all the routes. Actually, I do think they might have run a route on nearly every drop back, or at least been on the field for that. And that's what's been the case the whole year. Those two are clearly on the field for most, if not all, 2 and 3 wide receiver sets. And the same thing happened last week where Mecole is the rotational third. The only thing that is like really developing in terms of who's running the routes and really who's getting the targets, because Juju and MBS have been getting most of the targets among the wide receivers and just not doing a lot with it. The only real development is that Sky Moore keeps creeping up. Last week, or well, now 2 weeks ago, was the first time he out-routed Justin Watson. And then now he gets on the field and does even a little bit more. And we saw they were using him really when they needed to move the chains to seal out that game, and then they didn't end up doing it, but they were putting him on the field in a very high intensity, high pressure situation. He looked good when he was out there too. So maybe there's something going on there. Like, obviously there is, but he's not seeing the field enough to be even on the fantasy radar close. So to me, like, I'm actually, I kind of think MVS is a little interesting. We saw him finally, like you said, have his best game. Finally. So I'm a little excited, optimistic about MVS. Juju just looks cooked, and that makes sense. He's been one of the
old. He's so old.
He's 24, and he's been in the league for 9 years already. So I think Juju's, he hasn't been an efficient receiver on a per route basis since 2018, and that isn't changing with the Chiefs. And the Chiefs should be the place where any receiver can excel. So like, Juju's just cooked. That's like all you can look at whenever you watch him play. He looks slow. He's not getting much separation. He's not making acrobatic catches. He'll probably pop up for some more good games. Unless they bench him, he will probably have a good game at some point. But like, do I know when it's going to be? It's going to be the Travis Kelce game, 25 yards and 4 touchdowns, because he's not making big plays. So, you know, you'll regret benching him one time over the next 5 weeks, and you'll feel better about it having done it for the other four.
Lawrence, your eyes lit up at Kyle suggesting Juju could get benched.
I was just thinking, like, man, we've come to this where that is even, you know, getting brought up. That's just wild. But instead of, you know, me trusting or feeling like I could trust any of these Kansas City receivers, I'm going to just keep on trusting the guy that throw to the receivers when he said that it would be different guys every week. And that's pretty much what it's been. And I don't even know if there has even been a guy yet besides Travis Kelce, obviously.
Yes, Travis Kelce plus anyone, literally anyone on the roster, except, of course, not Juju, who they paid some money to, not MBS, who they paid a lot of money to.
Yeah, like, you've seen him come out, get the 8 targets, 6 catches for 90 yards. That's cool. He probably ain't doing that next week, though. But somehow Patrick Mahomes going to throw for it. It's like Patrick Mahomes, all right, boom, you go out here, throw for 300 yards, but all your receivers got 50 yards or less. Like, what's going on around here? You throw 4 touchdowns, you threw them all to the tight end. So it's like, I'm mad I done drafted Juju in some of my leagues, man.
Yeah, me too.
I thought he was about to get off in this offense, man, especially the type of role that he's played and excelled at when he played next to Antonio Brown. You figure, hey, now they got Travis Kelce here, so you got someone to take the pressure off. Well, he ain't getting no pressure. I think he dropped his first target last night. So it's just like, yeah, and like Kyle say, we will regret benching him one of these weeks. But the week after that, we probably going to just be like, oh, now, okay, I see what was going on.
Yeah, I've issued several mea culpas already, culpas on being high on Juju. It's so weird because he's getting the workload I expected. But like, as Kyle alluded to, I just overestimated what the upside of Juju would be on that workload since he's apparently cooked. And in the backfield, I was going to ask you guys about the backfield. There's really nothing to ask, actually. It seemed like Isaiah Pacheco had become the number two back. But then lo and behold, they fall behind 17-0. That equals Jerick McKinnon coming back in the game. Isaiah Pacheco's two big games have been when they were killing the Cardinals in week 1 and when they totally controlled the pace of play against the Bucks in week 4. And it just looks like anytime the game's in doubt, anytime hurry-up mode, anytime like pass-happy mode, it's still going to be Jerick McKinnon ahead of Isaiah Pacheco. And then Clyde Edwards-Helaire trying to score 2 touchdowns on 12 touches and 40 yards from scrimmage.
And he almost had his touchdown. He got stopped at the 1, and we was going to have to change his name to Clyde Touchdowns-Helaire.
I would refuse to do that. No, actually, though, he is a friend of the show. I keep always forget that. He's been on the Roto-World Football Show. So enough about Monday Night Football, even though there's some rankings talk in there. 4 teams on bye this week. Injuries mounting. I did my initial ranking sweep this morning. It's the first week where kind of the landscape just looks like totally different, where I'm moving guys up several tiers, Guys are just falling several tiers. Like, things are starting to really, really shake out. But then, Lawrence, there's still some guys where we don't know what to think. We don't know what to do. Who are you having trouble with at running back as we enter week six?
And it's a guy that you didn't think we'd have much trouble with. Is Aaron Jones. He's actually overall right now, he's at running back 13. And that's kind of, people had him in that range coming into the season. In that maybe literally eight to 13 range. The only thing about this is him being the 13th best running back in fantasy right now is being boosted by week two, in which he was running back 2 overall. In that game, he scored 2 touchdowns. In no other week has he scored a touchdown. In fact, his other weeks, if you take away that week 2, he's running back 29, 49, 19, and 32. If you took Aaron Jones's name off of those numbers, you would not say, hey, you wouldn't even say that was A.J. Dillon. Maybe. But we're talking about Aaron Jones right here. So now it's like, what do we got here, you know? Now they playing the Jets. They went from losing to the Giants. Now they get to test their, you know, now they get to test themselves again against the other winning record New York team.
Yeah, Lawrence, you live in the cradle of football.
Yeah, you're right. I'm loving winning life out here. Everybody's happy right now. Danny Dimes and Zach Wilson. But now in a matchup against the Jets coming up. I have to feel like this is a bounce back week for him. Raheem Mostert just went for 113 yards on this Jets team, despite them getting smoked. So you got to feel like something is there with Aaron Jones this week, but at the same time, it hasn't been. So I don't know where to rank him.
Yeah. I mean, Kyle, Aaron Jones, he's honestly getting the workloads we expected. It's not like we expected Aaron Jones to be like a 20 touch player, but he's gotten at least 15 touches each of the past 4 weeks. He's gotten up around 18 to 19 touches several times, but even with the Packers receiver core chaos, the increased receptions just are not materializing. He's not caught more than 3 balls in any one game. As Lawrence said, the touchdowns haven't been there. That's probably because it's like the offensive environment is not as good as we are expecting with the Green Bay Packers. And like, I'm keeping like the top 18 faith, Kyle, but do we have to readjust on Aaron Jones, or can we just keep waiting this out?
I mean, top 18, we got 4 teams on bye and running back injuries everywhere. Isn't even that high of a bar to clear. But it does feel like to me, barring the sort of like chunky long runs back to back to back like he did versus Chicago, there just isn't a ceiling here because they're splitting all the carries. And A.J. Dillon's been pretty good as a pass catcher. He's still not getting like the bulk of the pass catching work by any means, but we're not seeing the splits without Davante Adams type of deal for Aaron Jones. He's just doing what he did when they had Davante Adams the whole time, running some routes, but still playing their traditional, mostly all the snaps coming at running back type of role. And to me, on this offense that's not absolutely boat-racing the league in points, that's not really a particularly high-value role. So I still think top 18 is a bar he can clear because, like, just simply getting, you know, 3 catches in all but one game, like, that's free PPR, like, assuming you're playing in a PPR league, that's like 5 or 6 points plus the yardage every single week, which is already a pretty good stepping stone to being a top 20 running back. But splitting the backfield with a guy who's good at the goal line, now showing better chops as a pass catcher, and they're totally comfortable with giving, like, the bulk of the carries. Last week was, in fact, the first time in the year we had seen Aaron Jones get more carries than A.J. Dillon. That's, like, such a big ceiling capper.
And yet, just to be clear, I actually have him on the RB1-2 borderline still this week, mostly just because of the touches, because like the guys who he's competing with, Breece Hall, who you can make an argument maybe to rank ahead of him, Jeff Wilson, David Montgomery, Miles Sanders, Raheem Mostert, maybe Kenneth Walker, Najee Harris is plummeting down the ranks. It's just a tough scene right now.
Yeah, I was made fun of last week on the show, and I was like, I'm not ranking Najee Harris as a top 20 running back. Man, what an idiot I was.
I know.
What did you get fun of you for that? Because we all had him at 18. How much fun did we make of you?
Yeah, I don't know. But I actually don't remember that, Kyle, to be honest.
I was like, I don't think I'm ranking in the top 20. And you're like, you can't go that low. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I was probably just sad.
There was another guy who ranked him at running back 30. That's a That's a real smart guy. Because man,
I didn't know that level. Yeah.
And it's still too high.
Yeah.
Jalen Warren might be ranked ahead of him soon. I said that sarcastically, but maybe it's not. Kyle, you wanted to talk about someone who in the summer, I mean, we kind of didn't know where to rank, but we maybe hoped that after 5 weeks, we would have a better idea of where to rank, but we don't. He plays for the Dallas Cowboys. What's his name?
Tony Pollard. And Tony Pollard, I guess the thing is, I just want to keep complaining. Complaining is one of my favorite things to do. Instead of ever feeling good about anything, I'll just find something to be upset
Lawrence
about.
Lawrence is a much more positive individual.
I can't find that in my blood. I mean, Tony Pollard averaging 5.6 yards per carry. In the past three games, he's rushed for more yards than Zeke twice. He also has a higher receiving yardage game and is getting more work in the receiving game. And yet still, no surprise. How could we have seen any other outcome coming? Tony Pollard, electric with the ball in his hands, more yards after contact per attempt, more missed tackles forced per attempt, higher, more long runs, period. Not per attempt, just period. Just breaking longer runs at a higher rate, not giving him the ball more than Zeke. They should give Zeke a fullback role. That'd be great for him. He'd do awesome.
Come on, man.
He'd be a good Kyle Juszczyk, right? Big, burly.
He doesn't even catch passes anymore. He only has 5 catches.
He doesn't anymore. I still think maybe he'd be okay at it, but honestly, I don't even know if he'd be okay at it.
Zeke can maybe sue you for libel, by the way, Kyle, for comparing him to Kyle Juszczyk, just to be clear.
No, I think he should write me a check for comparing him to such a good player.
Oh my gosh.
I'm doing pro bono PR for him, getting him in the Kyle Juszczyk, Patrick Ricard tier of players. And the thing is, I guess, how much can last week going for 11 yards per carry, 3 weeks ago going for 8 yards per carry, the 4-catch, 55-yard game, finding the end zone twice already, how much can that hold up for Tony Pollard? Because we know he's not getting more than a dozen touches in a game would be a good outcome for him. But he looks so good every time he touches the ball. Can he really continue to be a flex-worthy play on 9-8 touches a game? I don't know, but I want to because I like him.
He has the 3 longest gains of the year for the Cowboys, by the way, Tony Pollard. Lawrence, do you have any thoughts on this? Zeke's workloads are actually going up.
They have, yeah.
19 carries in week 4 and then a season high 22 in week 5.
I feel like, week 5 was due to the game script. I almost felt like the Rams never had a chance to be winning that game. No matter what was going on, I knew Dallas was winning that whole time. The thing about Pollard, you mentioned the 3 longest gains of the year or whatever. It's you got these games like you just had, but you can simply go back to week 4 and it's 8 carries for 6 yards. Week 1, 6 carries for 8 yards. Week 2 is okay, 9 for 43. That's what makes a ranking a dude like him that so tough. If he got Kareem Hunt workload,
it would be
a lot easier. And even in the reception department, he's had 4-1 game, but the other 3, 1, 2, and 0. That is, it's just wild, So, and I think it's having to do, with the game script, and it's just going to keep him from being in our flexes, being a trustworthy flex every week. I write an article about flex players every week. I'm scared to put him in there because he'll do something like what he just done, and then he could have 8 carries for 6 yards, and they just stop going to him or what have you. And like you said, Zeke's workload is going up. 10 carries, then 15, 19 to 22. Zeke ain't going away. While I don't know which Dallas Cowboys to rank ahead, I really don't know where to rank this guy. So this was a good choice, Kyle.
I don't know the numbers.
I'm like, what?
Well, I'll say for this week, there's maybe – I'm keeping him kind of in the Kareem Hunt zone. I have him behind Kareem Hunt. He's currently the RB27 because, like you said, you get the 6 carry, 8-yard performances, but he's in the company of a lot of backs who are like that. And unlike a lot of those backs, he does have the 80 to 90 yard upside. I feel like they're going to need his changeup ability more this week against the elite Eagles defense. And just looking forward, you would hope that Tony Pollard's overall offensive environment improves when Dak Prescott comes back, even though apparently, you know, I don't know, Cooper Rush is apparently great. Really good.
Yeah, he doesn't know what it's like to lose.
No, he does not. And but man, you got to keep you have to keep Tony Pollard in like the top 28 because like RB 30 to 40 range. It's people who we have like some things about them, but it's like Rashad White, yeah, Michael Carter, Cam Akers, Mike Boone, Brian Robinson, right. Alexander Madison.
And we'd go Pollard over all of those easily.
So you got it. Despite the horrible weak potential, you have to keep him in like the top 30. And some, I mean, you could almost argue the top 24. Top 24 is a stretch, but top 28, and just like pray something good happens, basically, because he does have weak. He has weak flipping potential with his big play potential. Just real quick at running back, I wanted to ask you guys about Travis Etienne against James Robinson. James Robinson seemed like he had taken control of this backfield, like really heavily out snapping Travis Etienne in weeks 2 and 3, but now it's flipped back to Etienne over the past 2 weeks as game scripts have gone haywire for the Jaguars. Week 5, like, profiled as a good week for James Robinson because it seemed like they'd be playing with a lead against a really bad run defense, and then that did not happen at all. Should we already be making the flip to Etienne back ahead of James Robinson, Kyle, or should we keep the face against the Indianapolis Colts this week? Should we make the flip again, or I don't know what to be other than reactionary in the Jaguars backfield, basically.
I mean, I think the past 2 weeks, both losses show something pretty clear that he's the change of pace, the third down back. A third down back might be a little generous because James Robinson is a good blocker, but when this team needs a spark, it makes sense to get him on the field. I don't think they're going to need that this week. I still think despite coming off, quote, a win, I don't know if you call being the Broncos without scoring a touchdown a win or not, but I guess the official NFL stats somehow ruled that one is not a tie. So coming off of a win, I'm not buying anything of this Colts team. The last time these two teams faced off was a 24-0 loss for the Colts. I think this should be the traditional use the two down banger type of back as much as you want to type of game. Whenever we think they're going to lose, I'm totally fine going back to Travis Etienne as a flex-ish option, but that doesn't look like the case this week.
I think they'll probably lose.
There was the week that they played the Eagles, I thought he'd actually have a better game than what he had yesterday because they got out to the lead, then they ended up losing, but I thought he'd had a chance being, you know, that they were 6.5-point dogs. I thought that was a good week for Etienne. As it stands right now, for me, it's going just back to it being, you know, it looks like a 50-50 committee when you just talk about the touches part of it. Etienne did get 5 targets, but James Robinson was able to get a couple of targets that he caught himself. So coming into the season, it seemed, especially week 1, we kind of knew that, like, James Robinson got the touchdowns week 1, but it was still pretty even. The next couple of weeks, James Robinson looked like a solidified RB2 in fantasy. And now it pretty much just kind of shifted back to what we thought it was originally. And that's a regular running back timeshare where on any given week, each guy could be the guy. This week, Etienne had the 30-yard run. He was that guy. And going forward against the Colts, I won't say what I said about week 5. Like, oh, this is the Texans. James Robinson should run all over him. And he did it. just like I said, he did it. So, you know, you just kind of now it's like, ah, man. Now they both flex dudes to me. Both flex plays at this point, man.
I guess you just got to really think about what you think is going to happen in this game. And it'll probably be pretty close. Maybe I should keep the faith with James Robinson one more week, Kyle, because the Colts have not been impressive. But neither have the Jaguars. They've looked really, really horrible, actually, for several weeks now. But we'll be right. It's a good time to reset the show. We will be right back after this.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's S-A-U-C-O-N-Y.com.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Just a reminder, if you don't have the NBC Sports Predictor app, go download it now. The contests are free and easy to play, and you have a shot to win thousands this weekend by predicting what will happen in college football, on the NASCAR circuit, and in the Premier League. There's also $100,000 up for grabs by guessing the outcome between the Cowboys and Eagles in our Sunday Night 7 contest. Wide receiver, I don't know where to rank any of them, Lawrence, but I'm just going to begin with you. And who are you having trouble ranking heading into Week 6?
Well, it's a player that I feel like is a very good player and should be, his stock should be up. A guy who was wide receiver 119 in Week 1. He's now gotten up to wide receiver 22. That is Devontae Smith of the Philadelphia Eagles. The reason I'm having trouble is because there's some flip-flop weeks here, but he, you know, with good reason. Like I mentioned, Week 1, just not a stat on the board. Wide receiver, maybe Julio was ranked higher than him in Week 1. Then you go Week 2.
It's a bad Week 1.
Yeah. You go Week 2, that's more what you expect of him, wide receiver 25. And then in Week 3, he went off for 169 and a touchdown, which made him the top receiver that week. The Eagles against the Jaguars was a bad weather game. Nobody got it going in the passing game, so you could kind of excuse that. But then in Week 5, he got it back together. 11 targets, 10 catches, 87 yards. He was actually a guy I wrote about as an optimal flex play last week. He delivered. Now he's sitting at wide receiver 22, and that's a solid spot for him. Like, as the Eagles' second option in the passing game, or maybe second option, I don't know. Dallas Goedert might have something to say about that. That's another reason it's hard to rank, because you have Dallas Goedert as well, who's performing. So now it's like, now you got the bye weeks in there, and it's just the question of whether, like, how high should he actually be ranked when you know this team can do volume passing?
Kyle, with Devontae Smith, he's cleared 7 catches for at least 80 yards in 3 of his past 4 games. With the exception, as Lawrence alluded to, the really bad weather game against the Jaguars. He actually has 72 more yards than A.J. Brown since Week 1. A.J. Brown had the 155-yard Week 1. And since then, Devontae Smith has been, like, consistently outproducing him. Of course, we're not ranking him higher than A.J. Brown still, because you can't just eliminate a 155-yard game for A.J. Brown, since it's what he does. Like, he's a spiked week type of player. But I got him into the top 20 this week, Devontae Smith, wide receiver 19. It is a 42.5 total with the Cowboys. It could become an ugly game. It might be too high as I dive into it more, but just, yeah, how should the gap be continuing to narrow between A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, basically?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I'm not ranking him ahead of A.J. Brown, but over the past 3 weeks, he has a slightly higher air yard share and a target share of 29. And that's massive, 29% target share. A.J. Brown's still getting his to nearly a 40% air yard share and a 26% target share. Those are both really good numbers, and they can be that way because of outside of Dallas Goedert, this team is not really throwing to they're not throwing to the running backs at all. They're not throwing to any of the backup receivers. So we have at least gotten ourselves to a very clear top two of receivers, and Dallas Goedert not far behind, but still a third option for the team. The gap is narrowing, but on the air, like, I don't think you can throw out Week 1, the fact that A.J. Brown can go out and just be this black hole of targets, everything coalescing around him. I don't think you can throw that out, even though maybe it ends up being his high watermark for the year in terms of, like, total targets. He still has a lead in target share if you include go back to Week 1. So I think I'm still, you know, I'm still comfortably ranking him ahead. And depending on who's on bye week, I haven't checked yet, but he could end up falling sort of right down to maybe at, you know, the wrong side of the wide receiver 1 borderline. It's not an indictment of him. It's just a praise of the fact that Devonta Smith is earning his own in this team.
Man, so you might have A.J. Brown falling out of the top 12, huh? It's a tough scene out here.
He'd be a fine, like, you know, wide receiver 13. Lots of good receivers. The only position I feel good about, like, yeah, the top 12 are kicking A right now. They're awesome.
They kind of are, but it's also weird. Like, it's because with Keenan Allen out, it's kind of Mike Williams. You know, it's Mike Evans, Cortland Sutton, CeeDee Lamb. Then it, like, kind of immediately gets weird. There's a player you're going to talk about, Kyle, by the name of Jalen Waddle, Michael Pittman. T. Higgins a little lower this week because I don't know about his health yet. Then Deontay Johnson or DK Metcalf. Like, it gets weird, just to be frank.
I don't know. Those guys all sound pretty good to me.
It's real weird.
I like receivers, but.
Well, why are you struggling to rank Jalen Waddle, Kyle? I mean, I know why, because it's very hard.
But, yeah.
why in particular?
I mean, unlike Devonta Smith, who over the past few weeks, I still want to call him the wide receiver two on this team, but he is performing as if he might be the wide receiver one. We've seen none of that from Jalen Waddle. His target share has plummeted to 16%. I mean, they're using clearly Tyreek Hill as the wide receiver one. He also has a 9% air yards share deficit to Tyreek Hill, and the production just hasn't been there. Maybe it's a product of the groin injury. He's been listed with that groin injury for a few weeks now, but like, he doesn't look like he's moving slow. They're not like limiting his snaps or anything. And maybe it's the Gabe Davis thing where like, you can still be on the field, but until you're 100% healthy, you just won't be able to create separation, get open, do the explosive things we're used to. Maybe it's that type of situation. Also, maybe it's the fact they've been, not by their own doing, rotating their quarterbacks, unfortunately. So there's a lot of moving parts with this team. Maybe once it stabilizes with Tua back under center sometime soon, we get normal, clear top two duo and no one else on the team matters type of situation. But it's been all Tyreek Hill for three-ish weeks.
Lawrence, what do you have to add on Jalen Waddle? Because it's a weird situation with him.
It's definitely tough, man. They down to QB3, and the numbers strictly show, you know, as soon as Tua left, Jalen Waddle disappeared, and I'll pretty much, you know, give it all to that. You know, week one, 69 yards in the touchdown. You know about the week two where him and Tyreek both went off. Week three against Buffalo, when the Dolphins didn't even run nothing but 39 plays, Waddle was the guy who got the 100 yards that day and not Tyreek Hill. As soon as Tua Tagovailoa was out of the game, you know, he's not done much since. And so, and I'll tell you this, even more specifically, in my personal leagues where I have him, I'm debating benching him based on who else I have on my roster. Until Tua comes back. Cause it's like what they showed in week five was that they're going to manufacture the targets to Tyreek Hill. And when you have a stat line like 7 receptions for 47 yards, that shows you they were actively trying to get him the ball. It just didn't work. Like, nothing was working for them offensively. So it's definitely tough. I can't make myself rank him out of the top 24, knowing there's bye weeks and knowing what he really can do when he has the quarterback, but he ain't got the quarterback, but that's what make it tricky.
Yeah, I think like Kyle kind of said, hopefully there's a Gabe Davis factor of play where he's getting healthier. I think in theory he's avoided setbacks, but yeah, Lawrence, like I originally had had him as like a high-end wide receiver two this week because I thought Tua was going to come back. But then Mike McDaniel was like very cagey on that on Monday.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like he's going to come.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's going to be a week of Teddy. I mean, in theory, Jalen Waddle is a great player for Teddy Bridgewater.
I am praying Teddy Bridgewater can come back and play.
Supposedly he wasn't concussed. So we think it'll be Teddy
Bridgewater. Yeah, he looks like he's good to play this week.
We think it'll be Teddy Bridgewater over Skylar Thompson. Because it's a disappointing 45.5 total right now. For Vikings, Dolphins, not like the worst total you've ever seen, but I think that would – Kyle, what do you think that total would be if Tua was like cleared to play this week? Would it be up to 50? I mean, that's probably way too
close.
Much.
I would say 48, 49.
It'd be at least 47, 48, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think 47 would probably be the right number. I think Tua's worth at least like
– Yeah, Tua's not worth 4 points.
Yeah, but, exactly. Tua's not worth four. I would
say 48-ish.
But I think he's probably worth at least 2 points over – what we assume is Teddy, but I'd have to imagine this line has some small percentage chance that Skylar Thompson is the quarterback. So
he
I think
he might be worth four over Skylar.
He might be worth four over Skylar, but I think the line is mostly assuming it's not Skylar Thompson because that's what it looks like right now. No guarantees. I think he's worth maybe 1.5 to 2 points over
he's probably worth two Teddy. He's probably worth two over Teddy. But yeah, hopefully things just trend in the right direction for Waddle. I just really hope he had a groin that he's avoided setbacks, Lawrence, because he needs to be a top. He needs to be a top 16 receiver, Jalen Waddle.
Yeah,
he needs to be
a high-end wide receiver too. It makes the whole offense better when you got to worry about, you know, two of those guys. But like I haven't seen nothing. Like one of you said earlier, he didn't look different. So I don't know, man. It just might be, I don't know, he missing that Alabama connection.
He's just, it's any guy, unless you're Tyreek Hill, who has a quarterback-proof attribute in his speed. He's the fastest guy in the NFL. Just any receiver, I guess, is going to get killed by having three different quarterbacks in 2 weeks. And maybe that's just been a part of the quietness for Jalen Waddle. The guy I wanted to talk about, Christian Kirk, who we all went from joking about being the most overpaid player in the league, like, oh, maybe the Jags knew what they were talking about. Suddenly, he only has three catches for 71 yards over the past 2 weeks as opposing defenses and the weather have made life a living hell for Trevor Lawrence. And I just all of a sudden feel like I don't know what to do with Christian Kirk. Zay Jones had a better week five. Evan Engram had a better week five. Maybe defenses were kind of like fantasy managers and weren't taking Christian Kirk seriously enough. I mean, that's probably unlikely, but the production – so he was getting by on touchdowns, too, in weeks 1 through 3. He wasn't getting by on, like elite counting numbers. And it's, I mean, he's still a wide receiver, too, right? But he's kind of falling to where I think I might have him outside the top 20 this week.
Yeah, I think you've got a good read on it. Like you said, I think it was important to note that, like, although he, in a sense, was sort of living up to the lofty expectations his contract gave him, it was because he was scoring and producing at like a high yards per target clip, not because he was, you would think if he's paid as like a top five guy, he'd be like a 28% target share, 30% target share monster. And he wasn't being a monster, right? He was playing efficiently, and that's still very good. You're happy, you know, if you're, you know, you're a Jags fan and you, quote, overpay for him, you're happy for him to be efficient. But ideally, if you pay a guy that much, he can also get a monstrous target share. And I don't think we're going to see that, you know, the high production, medium, good, but not great target share sort of proves that. And I think because of that, you're going to get down weeks like the week when they can't beat the Houston Texans. They can't mount more than 6 points. If that happens, then it's probably going to be a tough week for him, especially if he's not, you know, that's what the medium target share means, is that he's not game proof. He's not bad offense proof. So, you know, like I said, I expect them to bounce back versus the Colts, as long as it's not strictly through the ground, which they haven't been a pure ground and pound team by any means. I think he'll bounce back, but we're being shown that you just can't coast on only efficiency to be like the wide receiver 15.
Yeah, what do we say? I mean, looking at the numbers here, he had the week one is the only week he's went over 100 yards so far. And then after that, like y'all mentioned, living on the touchdowns, maybe we can break out those jokes again about him. You know what I mean? Maybe that's what it's time for. We just break the – hey, he was shutting us up the first 3 weeks. You know, we like, oh. And meanwhile, you know, no one has him on the roster except that guy who drafted him by mistake in the 9th and 10th round. And now, yeah, right. They was, I told you, no, he fell to you. Don't say that.
I did. I stopped Christian Kirk falling a lot, and I felt really good about it for a few weeks. And man, in Arizona, 6 catches for 78 yards. That was a spiked week for Christian Kirk. We cannot have that be his spiked week.
Right. But then when it comes with the 2 touchdowns, it's like, well, like, all right, we'll accept that. But then when you just step back, really open up the curtain, first 3 weeks, he has 6 catches in each of the first 3 games. And that's not, you know, that's not ideal from a team's wide receiver one, but he made it work with the touchdowns. The question becomes, do we expect him to be scoring? Well, do we expect the Jaguars to keep scoring? It looked like they was, you know, they started out well, like, oh, Jaguars might win the division. Now they're starting to look like the same old Jags. So, and we talked about ETN and Robinson earlier. The offense as a whole seems to be coming back down to earth. So that's probably why we're talking about him right now.
But the Jags, by the way, just as a team, really, really weird, where they lost to the Commanders. They shut out the Colts. They destroy the Chargers. They destroy the Eagles for one half and then lose very badly to the Eagles. And they lose to the Texans.
Unbelievable.
Not quite sure what to think of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Kyle, you aren't quite sure where to rank a first-round rookie who made his first career start in week 5 at quarterback.
Yeah, Kenny Pickett's interesting because the Steelers are sort of doing, I mean, they were forced to, but they'll probably continue to be forced to do what they do with Ben Roethlisberger, which is like, we can't run the ball efficiently. Teams, because we can't run the ball efficiently, are able to put up points on us pretty consistently. Also, their opponents, like even when they had Ben Roethlisberger, they're facing Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, like they were facing good teams on a consistent basis. We saw last week, they faced a team that comes out with a 98-yard score, gets, what, a 67, I think, yard score from Gabe Davis.
Only 62.
My bad. So when that happens, you get Kenny Pickett, I believe, attempting 52 passes last week.
Well, it was 52 passes in his first career start. Probably not how they drew it up.
Yeah, and he got over 300 yards, but I believe 80 or 84 of them came on a final two drives in which we had already seen Josh Allen pulled. He's like a middling to below average quarterback in EPA per play. But he's been aggressive. He's attempting deep passes. Even Mitch was doing this too. The offense has the players capable of running deep down the field and making big plays. So he's going to be passing a lot. They play the Bucs this coming week. So it's not a great defensive matchup. But really, at this point, maybe you are just banking on garbage time. Is garbage time smart to bank on? I don't know. But he's got the talent around him to do well. PFF has actually graded them as having an above-average pass-blocking offensive line, despite sort of the offensive line woes coming into the season. So he's set up to have success. It's kind of just on him to do that now. And I'm not sure from what I've seen. I think I've watched both of his games so far.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. I mean, one of them was the Bills one, and half of that game for, you know, when the Bills are on offense, that's fun. So I'll take it.
All right, that works. Yeah,
there are worse outcomes.
You know, it's always interesting when you get a rookie in their first start thrown into the fire against a top team like the Bills, and
probably the best team in the NFL.
Now they'll get the Bucs here.
So from the best team in the NFL to the best player in league history, starting opposite him at quarterback. Tough scene.
Yes. What I do like this for is the Steelers wide receivers. That's what I do like this for. Me personally, I ain't going to have too much problem actually ranking him because I ain't ranking him as no top 20 quarterback.
Got him right on the board. I got his QB 21. We do got the
buys. That's always going to play a factor. Maybe he doesn't throw 52. Well, we know I don't think anybody going to average 50 throws per game, but maybe that number realistically is around 38 to 40 with how they're going to have to be playing these teams. The Pittsburgh defense is not what we've grown accustomed to seeing, especially in the absence of TJ Watt. The Bills just showed you that despite, you know, how, you know, we know what the Bills represent on both sides of the ball, but the team just got dog walked out here, you know? So if Kenny Pickett could, you know, again, that was his first start. People saying he showed promise. He just looked like a regular rookie to me. I don't know if there was promise. He wasn't like the worst thing we ever seen.
We've seen worse quarterbacks come through to make their first start.
It was simply a rookie quarterback making his first start and looked like a rookie. It wasn't nothing like, oh, he gonna be this or he gonna be that. It's just that a rookie quarterback. If he could get these dudes, these playmakers that he got, some touchdowns, because we see Deontay Johnson still getting the elite target share. We love that. We see George Pickens on the rise, two straight games with 8 targets and above 80 yards. We love that too. So if we could just turn that into some touchdowns, see, now we talking. But for now, and with the bye weeks included, probably hovering around that, you know, 20-ish quarterback range.
Yeah, I think, Kyle, you kind of laid it out well where Kenny Pickett and Lawrence, you hinted at this too, 50 attempts probably isn't realistic. 38 to 40 is probably pretty highly realistic where, as we talked about earlier in the show, the Steelers can't run the ball right now. It's really hard to run in general against the Bucs still. They're going to be trailing the entire game. It should be another pretty high attempts game. You like high attempts, at least when you have weapons. It's this sorry scene at quarterback, right? I mean, the QB, here's just the initial QB, QB 11 to 20 ranks real quick. Geno Smith, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Carson Wentz, Jimmy Garoppolo, Trevor Lawrence, Stafford, Matt Ryan, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields. Then I have Kenny Pickett. You could honestly make an argument for Kenny Pickett to be like in the top 15
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking, like, if you say he's, like, better than Carson Wentz, has better weapons than Carson Wentz, especially with Jahan Dotson maybe banged up, like, if you just think all that looks better than Carson Wentz, like, yeah, he's Carson Wentz. I buy that you think some other middle-of-the-road quarterback so that's the thing. Better.
Yeah. Yeah, you can make the argument, but also, like, Lawrence, like, yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. He didn't really actually look that good or anything.
Yeah, he threw the ball a lot. Yeah. That's what happened. He threw a lot of passes. And when you throw 50 times, you should throw for 300 yards.
Yeah. I will say he's a viable streamer this week, even though it's a bad matchup. Just based on attempts alone, you got to call him a viable streamer this week. The Bucs not allowing a ton of quarterback fantasy points, but it could be like the old Eli days. Just get us home garbage time. Bring it home. Bring it home.
Yeah, right, right.
We'll end the show talking about tight ends, Lawrence. You have someone who we liked. It was kind of a life hack for a while. But then Joe Flacco went out, and then suddenly this person caught zero passes in week five. Who are we concerned about here at tight end?
It's going to be Tyler Conklin, man. I actually, during that game, I had to make sure he didn't get hurt, you know. But it was just simply the Jets didn't have to throw the ball a lot. 21 pass attempts for Zach Wilson. They rolled over the Dolphins with their third-string quarterback. He came into week four as the eighth best tight end in fantasy. He's now, you know, he's still a tight end one, you know, coming in at 12th ranked at the position. But now I don't know exactly where to rank him, because is his lack of production due to how that game script went? Or is it because we got Zach Wilson back now and this is just how it's going to be? 5 catches for 52 in week 4 is not bad at all, but those numbers kept declining. That declined from the week before when we had 8 for 84. So now my question that I'm asking myself is like, all right, is this just back to the regular old no-name run around and block people Tyler Conklin?
Yeah, I think I'm going to lean towards Key. I'm keeping him in the top 10 this week, just as tight end 10, and that's just initially, but I do think – so we saw the initial hit without Joe Flacco in week 4, but like you said, Lawrence, it was at least like a usable game. I do think week 5 was mostly about the other team's starting quarterback got hurt on literally the first play, and then they were just able to dictate the pace of play for 4 quarters. They only attempt 21 passes. Like, bad as the Packers have looked right now, I don't think the Jets are going to survive by attempting only 21 passes. I mean, the Packers do have a soft run defense. So I guess there is a concern that maybe the Jets, who've really kind of gotten the run game cooking, could take over the game on the ground. But it's hard to see Zach Wilson below 30 attempts this week. And if it's hard to see Zach Wilson below 30 attempts, I think you can at least give 4 or 5 of those targets at the bare minimum to Tyler Conklin. And maybe 6 to 7. And a tight end is just crazy right now. Like,
yeah, I couldn't go tight end.
These are the options. It's
the concerning thing for me is
Kyle, just real quick. It's Evan Engram, Hayden Hurst, yes, Tonyan, yes. Irv Smith, Dalton Schultz, Hunter Henry, yes. Will Disley. Like, it's
one more or two more of those. There are like 5 guys in there you named. I think the concerning thing for me, CJ Uzomah ran more routes than Tyler Conklin last week. That was the concern. Yeah, that was a concern at the start of the season. Uzomah got a little banged up, and then he came back like 2 or 3 weeks ago, but really wasn't playing that much. And it seemed, you know, to me, you can at least tell yourself that he was banged up early in the season. Now he's coming back. They're scaling his role up, and it's a full tight end by committee. And on top of that, I wouldn't have even felt comfortable with him as a top 10 tight end if CJ Uzomah just didn't exist, if he just retired, because I have just a bias towards the fact that Garrett Wilson is really good, Elijah Moore might be good, and Corey Davis is very good. The running backs are great receivers out of the backfield, both of them, frankly, as we saw with like the 70-some-odd yard catch that then resulted in a Michael Carter touchdown plunder for like the 9th time that day. But like, he's like the 5th or 6th best pass catcher on this team, and it's a team that I don't think is going to be that effective at throwing the football because they have Zach Wilson. So that was before CJ Uzomah got a bunch of snaps, ran more routes last week. I don't even think I'll have him ranked as like a top 20 tight end. Maybe he'll get like 17, but he looks like a full committee tight end.
I mean, last week. Look, but hey, both of y'all, if you Pat got him at 10, Kyle, you won't rank him.
That was without doing 20. A deep dive.
Both of those can be real things. Both of those could be very real. I picked up Tyler Conklin in one of my leagues to hopefully get three more points than what Kyle Pitts gave me every week, and he gave me nothing.
A stunning tribute to Kyle Pitts, as he did nothing.
I miss him now. I want them 3 points.
Man, I wonder, hopefully Kyle Pitts comes back this week, or at least I don't know if he will.
No. Don't make me start Kyle Pitts for 4 points again. I don't want him to come back. Come back next year.
Man, yeah, I hadn't done a deep dive in tight end yet. I didn't realize that CJ Uzama was, man, I didn't need to hear that. Kind of ruined my day, just to be honest.
Now you want to rank him at tight end 24 too.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm probably still going to rank him ahead of a lot of these guys, a lot of these clowns. Not a good position right now.
Where do you have Taysom Hill ranked? I wanted you to ask me about tight end so I could ask you about that.
Friggin' tight end 8.
Let's go.
what do you mean? That's it?
He's got the 0 point floor is kind of the problem.
It's so weird. I had like no clue to do with him. He got like, what, I think 8 carries last week. Like, what is the average really good? Like, what is Deebo Samuel average on 8 carries? If it's like 5 yards a carry, that's 40 yards. I think he has one target this year.
He has literally one target.
So, and maybe one pass, maybe two. So it's like it's the Tony Pollard thing where like, and really you're projecting Taysom Hill for like 4 carries, but like, his efficiency is really good. He's really good at football. So, and tight end sucks. Tight end's terrible.
He's not a tight end is the problem.
He should be the number one ranked tight end for the next 3 years. There we go.
He even played a snap at tight end.
He like 32 years old. He ain't no young dude. Like
he would fit right in on this show. Except for Kyle. Yeah, he would be. He's definitely Lawrence and Pat age. So he's always older than you think, Taysom, man. Like, however old you think he is, add 2 years is how old Taysom Hill is.
Still explosive, though.
Yeah, you got to give him credit. He's the most triggering player in the history of fantasy football, but he's also kind of good. You just got to give him credit. You got to give us credit for pumping out a good show today. Hit on a lot of rankings conundrums. We'll continue to do that all week. Kyle's got his stats article coming out. Lawrence has his flex article coming out. My rankings article coming out. You guys have Q&As, right? You got a bunch of stuff. We got all sorts of stuff. We're going to be talking about rankings all week.
We got the Monday night pregame Q&A, Thursday night pregame Q&A, both on NFL on NBC YouTube.
So check it all out. Check out everything on the site. Check out our news updates. It's a weird week at running back. Got some injury situations to monitor, especially in Arizona. So for Lawrence Jackson, for Kyle Dvorak, I'm Patrick Daugherty. Thanks for listening. We'll be back later this week.
Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's SAUCONY.com.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.